And we return, it is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper with you, along with Bonnie Berman. 7 minutes past 1 o'clock. Today we visit with University of Miami Law Professor Dr. Donald Jones. He teaches constitutional law, criminal procedure, and employment discrimination law. He's also a nationally known commentator and columnist. We'll discuss his book, Fear of a Hip-Hop Planet, America's New Dilemma. Welcome to you, Dr. Donald Jones, and happy Martin Luther King Day.
Glad to be here.
Thank you for joining us. You know, this wasn't going to be my first question, but it is now. How do you think that hip-hop and what we're going to be discussing today does relate to this Martin Luther King Day commemoration?
Thank you for that question. I think that it relates because we still live in two worlds. I would say in 1968, the Kerner Commission warned us. It said, America is becoming two societies, one black, one white, separate and unequal. And the reason for my book is the idea that we have become two worlds, but there are blacks on both sides. And I think that the line that used to be called a color line has been replaced with the line between the suburbs and the inner city. And I think that what I'm talking about is inequality. What I'm talking about is the lack of opportunity. What I'm talking about is the fact that in many urban areas, schools are failing. Work has disappeared. And they're facing a drug war which has targeted their communities. And so many of the issues that King talked about, the joblessness, the lack of educational opportunities, are still there. But we don't call them the same thing. So we don't call these racial problems. We call them urban problems. We call them inner city problems. But at the core, the problem is the same. And you say, well, what does this have to do with hip hop? Well, you see, I think that much of what we're calling hip hop is not just music. It is a culture. And that culture is a source of fear. So, for example, a person in a Brooks Brothers suit can become president with a Harvard degree. But a black child in a hoodie and saggy pants may have trouble getting home from the 7-Eleven. So the fear and the moral distance is still there. We've simply recoded what we call race. And so we still have an American dilemma in this country. It's just coded a different way. So we don't call it black. We don't call it white. But the problem is still there. The majority of blacks who live in these urban areas still face the same kinds of conditions that King was trying to address.
I'm a 60-year-old white guy. I'm not a fan of the music at all. But maybe this is ignorant, but is there a difference between hip-hop and rap?
Well, not really, except that rap is really a form of music. Hip-hop is something broader. It is a culture. It is a language. It is a source of what I would call identity. People not only listen to hip-hop as music, it's a place, it's a site where they make sense of who they are. And so the reason I'm saying, I call it Fear of Hip-Hop Planet, is that hip-hop really is the culture by which people in this city seem to define themselves. And it's what we are afraid of, I think.
So hip-hop music has been demonized not only for the sound and lyrics, but more importantly as a cause for crime and violence.
Yes. Yes.
Are we misunderstanding it?
Well, you see, I think that hip hop really is an effort to respond to those conditions. People see it as the problem, but it is a response. You know, let's think of it this way. When we were in the 1960s, there were demonstrations. I participated in them. There were other people who engaged in riots, and I think that was wrong. But these were responses to conditions which were unfair. Now, today, I don't see so many demonstrations. Fortunately, we don't see so many riots. But in many ways, hip-hop is the means by which this generation of urban kids, black and brown, have sought to empower themselves. So it is not just music. Is it a way for them to empower themselves?
You mean letting off steam?
Well, it's that, too, but it's a way of having an ability to participate in society, have a voice.
An identity?
An identity and a voice. So, for example, through hip-hop, you have people who otherwise might just be working for McDonald's. They can become visible. They can say what they want. Tupac, for example, has made incredible contributions, I think, to our discourse. You can talk about police brutality. You can talk about urban conditions. you can represent yourself, whereas before they would be completely unrepresented.
Well, let's listen to a little Tupac, shall we?
Yes.
And I left this beginning because it was such a beautiful instrumental.
I love it.
Professor, talk about that. And I just want to say that we just
got... over there juking.
It was I. An email that the introduction to the Tupac song is Bruce Hornsby's That's Just the Way It Is.
And I think that what you're seeing is the effort to translate political aspiration into culture. And I think the political aspiration is to see real social change. And I think that at one point they might have picked up the Molotov cocktail. Now they picked up the mic. And so they're attempting to use culture as a means of bringing about change. And I think that that's very positive. I think that also what you're seeing is the ability to take what you take art forms which are traditional and transform them. So the whole situation that you have is you have people who don't really have much to work with. They live in urban decay. They have limited education. They figure out a way to engage in creative play with the elements of their lives and translate that into art. Now, that's really something special. You know, they figure out a way to express their anger, their alienation in a way that's creative and constructive rather than destructive. And I think that's, and so I think that they've created something that people should listen to. Even if you don't like it as music, the stories that they're telling is the stories of the lived experience of people who live in the hood. And as human beings, we need to have enough empathy to try to understand what's happening. Because these are issues that we as society haven't addressed well, but we need to address them.
Dr. Jones, before we started this program, we had some callers who were complaining that it was sort of blasphemy that we would be doing a program about hip-hop music on Martin Luther King's birthday. What's your response to
that?
Well,
I think King was really about inequality. He says, when one person is poor, I cannot be rich. And King believed deeply in the idea that everyone should have opportunities. And so what my book is about is the fact that everyone today does not have those opportunities. You know, there are many high schools in urban areas which have resegregated. The same percentage of blacks who were in Miami Edison in 1950, the same. So we have two educational systems, one for the inner city and one for the suburbs. And the people from those high schools aren't even prepared for college. And so
there are a lot of administrators next door that right. would vehemently disagree.
Well,
with
I want
you.
To talk to them because I think it's true. And so I think that what the music is doing, it gives them a way of expressing what that's all about. And this is what King cared about. He cared about opportunities. He cared about the people who lived in places like the inner city. And this is their sound. This is their voice. And I think King would have listened to that.
Before we take a short break, why does it have to be, okay, so the vulgarity is an expression of
anger.
Perhaps of the anger. And
yes.
Why the degradation of women?
Well, I think that's unfortunate. I think hip hop is both revolutionary and reactionary at the same time. I don't support, agree with, or think is reasonable for them to have lyrics that degrade women. But at the same time, painful as it is for me to listen to that, I don't think that hip hop is a source of the problem. I distinguish between a root and a branch. Mm-hmm. And so the people who are writing this aren't writing this off in the jungle. They're writing this in an American society in which much of the media has become a pornosphere. You can't watch HBO without, you flick down a channel, you'll see a woman naked running across the screen. You see, so there's a woman named Melissa Alexander, I think her name is, and she's being mistreated by the criminal justice system. She's a black woman. I think there's sexism involved in that, but the hip-hop isn't creating that. If you ask what most black women make in the society, you find that they make probably the lowest of what anyone makes. They're not responsible for that. And so there is sexism in society, and they participate in it. The metaphor that bell hooks uses is we live in a plantation, and that plantation produces ideology, and one of those is sexism. Now, the people who labor on it, which is all of us, the people in hip-hop are part of that. They live in that plantation, and they absorb that negativity as well as the rest of us. And so what they're doing, like a mirror, is reflecting or expressing what they're getting. But bad as that is, let's not mistake the reflection for the reality. Let's not mistake the root for the branch. They are simply victims like black women. They are all victims.
We're speaking with Dr. Donald Jones. He teaches constitutional law, criminal procedure, and employment discrimination at University of Miami. He's also a nationally known commentator and columnist, and we're talking about his latest book, Fear of a Hip-Hop Planet, America's New Dilemma. Let's take a break, and we'll return. And we're back with today's topical currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and Professor Marvin Jones, author of several books and essays. His latest book is Fear of a Hip-Hop Planet, America's New Dilemma. If you want to join in the conversation, the number to call is 1-800-743-9576. That's 1-800-743-9576. Or you can email radio at WLRN.org, radio at WLRN.org. Professor, do you see hip-hop as a means to solving any of this problem?
Well, I think...
Or do you think it adds to it?
Well, I think it's part of the solution rather than part of the problem. I think that art has always played a role in the struggle of blacks. And if only to try to provide a human dimension or a human testimony to what is going on. I think the most powerful thing you can do if you want to bring about change is to tell stories. To some extent, the civil rights movement succeeded because of the story that blacks were able to tell. And I think that the narrative that hip hop is telling is what I would call a counter story. So the story that I get from the media is that the reason the ghetto exists is because that people don't want to work. The reason that the ghetto exists is because you have dysfunctional families. And it's all their fault. And what hip hop gives you is a counter story. it says that, well, you know, we are human too, that we have aspirations, we have goals, that we are really not so different from the rest of you. And I think that, in other words, the only way that we can justify, I think, treating the ghetto the way it is that you have to, those people are somehow different from us. But they're not. And I think that's what hip hop is doing. It's a way of breaking down barriers, breaking down stereotypes. So the stereotypes that Tupac was talking about. And so unless we can break down stereotypes, we cannot create opportunity. And I think that's what hip hop is doing, is challenging those stereotypes. Not so much perpetuating them, but in my view, tearing them down.
How about some of my African-American friends who are my age and some sort of have the Bill Cosby kind of attitude?
Yes.
that rappers as social models is very detrimental to black youth?
Well, I think that's a narrow way of looking at it. I do agree that much of the problem you have with poverty starts with the attitudes and values a person has. And so certainly it's true that blacks are responsible to a large extent for their own situation. But there is a dimension of this that has to do with what I would call structural problems, the problem that in many urban areas the jobs have disappeared, the problem that the drug war has been targeted to low-income areas, what happened to be like Overtown and Harlem and Liberty City. And so to the extent that those problems exist, there has to be some pushback. There has to be someone who will begin to express how painful, how unfair. And so I think that hip-hop represents a way of pushing back, of telling stories that take us to a different place. When I listen to hip-hop, I hear stories about people who are poets, who are artists, who are trying to articulate their experience. And what Bill Cosby is seeing is the fact that, well, these people don't reflect his values. But you see, this is a different generation with different experiences.
Or his millions.
Right. And so we've got to have enough empathy to not shoot the messenger, to not reject the messenger because they have saggy pants.
Now, one of your heroes is James Baldwin. I
yes.
want to talk about that after. The other is Dr. Martin Luther King.
Yes.
And I assume the name of your book is taken from that Fear of a Black Planet by
yes.
Public Enemy.
Yes.
So we do have that song by Public Enemy here, which I didn't, and I included what
right.
preceded it, Fight the Power.
Fight the Power.
Just 100 years after Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation that freed the slaves, 200,000 people converge on the nation's capital to rally for civil rights. They come by train, they come by bus, and by air. They come from the north, the south, the east, and west. They come united in one cause, to urge Congress to pass a civil rights bill to end forever the blight of racial inequity. By 11:30, there are more than 200,000 thronging the mall, a crowd that is bigger than the most optimistic forecasts. Now there's a growing animation. It seems as if the demonstrators were finding strength in each other, had discovered their cause was a bond. Arrests in Washington were below normal. Police attribute this to the fact that for the first time in 30 years, you couldn't even buy a beer in Washington. The civil rights marchers needed no stimulants like that. They provided their own with songs that ranged from the sacred to the hillbilly, but with the one recurring theme, the cause of 20 million Negroes. Washington, D.C., 1963. Democracy speaks in a mighty voice.
Check this out, man. We rolling this way. That march in 1963, that's a bit of nonsense. We ain't rolling like that no more. Matter of fact, the young black America, we rolling up with seminars, press conferences, and straight up rallies. Am I right? We're gonna get what we got to get. Coming to us, word up. We ain't going out like that 63 nonsense.
Playback.
While I'm singing, hey! Giving what you're getting, knowing what I'm knowing, while the black band's sweating, in the rhythm I'm rolling, gotta give us what we want, gotta give us what we need, hey!
What I love this song.
You do. Now, what about their assessment of the civil rights movement?
Well, I think that what you're hearing is
nonsense.
Is authentic. In other words, the civil rights narrative, that's the narrative I grew up on. That's goes down for me like cafe con leche. But for the millions of blacks, who's the black majority, who still live in inner cities, the civil rights narrative rings hollow. It didn't include them. And they're like people who've been left behind, marooned in these islands of social decay.
What do you mean it didn't include them?
Well, in other words, the for the blacks who move into the suburbs, they have opportunities. They have good schools they can go to. They can go to college. But people who live in inner cities are, in many ways, they're in a jobless, they're in a place where joblessness is epidemic, where crime rates are high, where schools fail, where
incarceration rates
and incarceration rates are astronomical, and so for them, opportunity is a lottery ticket. Hope is a lottery ticket. And so I think that we've got to figure out a way to make opportunity reality for them. We haven't. But I think to get past that, we've got to get past the stereotype. At one point, stereotypes were about people. Now what we've done is we've stereotyped whole communities. You know, someone asked where the Bronx was. They said they didn't know, but wherever it was, it had a bad reputation. If you're simply from the ghetto or look like you're from the ghetto, people are afraid of you. And so that's the barrier. That's the wall. Mm-hmm. There's this wall that we've built, and it's a wall in which prejudice has now taken the form of how do you look, what zip code you live in addition to race. And that's the wall I think we have to break down.
Our telephone number, if you'd like to join in, 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-WLRN. Also email, if you're a little shy, radio@WLRN.org. We're speaking with University of Miami Law Professor Dr. Donald Jones. Let's take a call. This is Dan. He's in Homestead. Hi there.
Hello. Yeah, I just wanted to challenge this notion that somehow these rap stars are members of the victimhood of misogyny. I mean, Howard Stern is a misogynist, and nobody mm-hmm. suggests that somehow he's some sort of a branch or a victim. And these rap stars, there are plenty of them plenty of rap stars who choose not to be misogynist, and those who do should be called for it. They should be called
yes.
on it. They
yes.
shouldn't be. They shouldn't be given some sort of pass by them being a branch or
no.
somehow a part of this victimhood of the community.
They should not be given a pass. I agree with you, but you see, I think at the same time, they should be held accountable. I think there should be a reparations movement for women, especially black women. Because of what Hollywood and other elements of the corporate media.
What form of reparation?
Well, I think, for example, Hollywood should donate millions of dollars to providing opportunities for women, and particularly women of color. They could, you know, donate to schools. But they should do something. But I think that rap is only part of a much larger cultural malaise. In other words, throughout our culture, whether you look at entertainment, whether you look at the print media, you have this sexism and you have this bigotry, not just sexism against women, but homophobia. But that's something that I think should not be targeted only or even primarily toward rap music. So, yes, condemn sexism, but condemn it everywhere. And let us not demonize this group of people. You see, because even though they have, you see, every art form blacks produce has contradictions. This is one of theirs. But these are people who didn't go to Harvard or Yale or may not even have graduated high school. They don't have the critical tools necessary to disabuse them of ideas that they've gotten from other places. And so they
But isn't there an urge to shock, though?
There is, certainly, they
are. To be cool that way?
Certainly. But you see, in other words, you've got to understand that the people who live in urban areas, there's tremendous sexism in the black community. It's in the black church. It's in the black press. But it's not just there. It's in the white press. It's in the mm-hmm. white church as well. And so I think that what we're doing is we're acting as though somehow the rap art invented sexism, as if they're the primary purveyors, when they are, to me, I would compare them to low-level drug dealers. The big dealers are the corporations, Sony, Columbia Records and so forth. So, you see, in other words, yes, the sexism is bad, it's wrong, and I'm opposed to it. But I don't think we should demonize. I think that instead of demonizing, we should listen in a more holistic way. And you'll find that this is simply one piece. You see, it's not the primary reason for why the art form exists. It is an aspect of which is unfortunate. But it's not what I think is at the core of what they're trying to say.
So you're not condoning it. You're in fact saying it's not good.
No, it's not good. It's horrible. It's wrong.
We're speaking with Professor D. Marvin Jones, and he's also an author, a speaker, a columnist. And his latest book is Fear of a Hip-Hop Planet, America's New Dilemma. On today's Topical Currents, another short break, and we'll return. And welcome back to Topical Currents for this Martin Luther King Jr. Day, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and Professor D. Marvin Jones, a law professor at University of Miami, and also an author, among other things. His latest book is Fear of a Hip-Hop Planet, America's New Dilemma. Before we get to our last selection, Professor, you talked about your two heroes and
yes.
inspiration for you becoming an attorney
yes.
were James Baldwin
yes.
and Dr. King. So if you'll yes. talk about both of them, how did they each inspire you?
Well, I think Baldwin, to me, was simply the greatest writer that African America has produced. His books convey, I think, the spirit and essence of what it feels like to be a Black American better than anyone that I know. And I always aspire to the eloquence that he has, to the poetry, to the ability to tell a story and use that story as a way of changing the world. King was, I think, probably the most powerful social activist in the 20th century, one of the most powerful thinkers. And I think he showed that through words, through ideas, through passion and conviction, you can change people's hearts. And so to me, the goal is to bring about change. The goal is to try to find a way through writing, through teaching, through speaking, to change the way people think. So we're never going to change discrimination by writing laws. Laws are important. We need them, but they're not enough. You change discrimination by changing the way people think. And so that's what I'm trying to do, change the way people think. And at one point, I think that the thought was that Black people were the danger. Let's be afraid of Black people. Now it's less Black and white. It's no longer Black and white. But you have some of the same problems in terms of stereotypes being focused on the same moral panic, been focused on people with saggy pants and hoodies. And so I think that we have to change that in order to create opportunities for them, that we have to try to push back against the idea that because someone has saggy pants, that makes them a criminal. Let's go arrest them. Let's not give them a chance. So I think we still have a dilemma. And that dilemma is that we simply have given race a new, we recoded it. And so it's now what we call intersectional. It's not just race. It's how you, whether you have gold teeth, whether you have saggy pants, whether you have twisty braids. But it's still prejudice, and we have to address that.
Let's take a call or two. We're visiting with Dr. Donald Jones of the University of Miami. He's a law professor and author of Fear of a Hip-Hop Planet. This is John. He's in Fort Lauderdale. Thanks for your patience. Hi.
Oh, thank you. It's a fascinating conversation. I appreciate it very much. You are just beginning to address some of the issues that I was going to ask you about. Mm-hmm. And one of them is that hip-hop is certainly not solely an African-American or Black
right.
Art
right.
form.
And right.
Eminem has been on the scene and at the top of the scene for many years.
Mm-hmm.
Will.i.am is a very, very well-known man who many people sought to speak after, and his group is actually Black, white, and brown.
Yes, right.
We also have Robin Thicke right now, and so we have collaboration.
Right.
And it's not just a Black phenomenon.
Right, right. I
agree. I'm going to hang up and listen to you, okay?
I'm sorry?
I'm going to hang up and listen to you because I'm driving and it's not safe.
Well, that's a good idea.
Okay.
Well, I think that one of the most wonderful things about hip hop is that it is an international movement. It's not limited by the boundary of race or limited by ethnicity. It's something that appeals to people in Japan, and it's that's a test of art, is whether or not it has the currency to get itself accepted by other cultures. And I think that that's absolutely true. But of course, it's rooted in, it grew up in the South Bronx. It grew up in gangster rap and Watts. And so it comes out of
Lauderdale.
Yeah, it grows out of this urban experience. And they found a way to bring in universal strands to make their music, give their music universal appeal, which says that they found a way to express their humanity. And they've done it in spite of the social conditions. The music is about the social conditions. It is created by the social conditions, but they found a way to transcend them in their poetry, in their lyrics. Now, all of it, it's not all good. I'm not going to say that. It does have contradictions, but they have at the root created an art form that has the cultural currency. It can go all across the world.
Now, one of the people he just mentioned, Professor Jones, was who? Will.i.am,
who
now isn't he the one who wrote the lyrics to our other selection, Dream?
Now that's probably, that must be true.
I saw his name.
Yeah, that sounds right. That sounds right, and which shows that he really does have credentials as a hip hop artist. The Will.i.am is with the Black Eyed Peas, and I look at him as sort of not. He's not gangster rap, but he is associated with it. But I think he would understand what we're saying. They had this one song which was so beautiful and powerful. But I think much of what you're getting from Will.i.am and others is an effort to mainstream hip hop.
And do we have a selection of that?
Yes.
But I think that that's good. And I think that every art form is going to take commercial forms.
I am happy. I have a dream.
I got a dream.
One day
we gonna work it out.
One day
we gonna work it out.
One day
we gonna work it out.
I have a dream.
I got a dream.
One day
we gonna work it out.
One day
we gonna work it out.
One day
we gonna work it out.
I have a dream.
I got a dream.
That one day.
That one day.
That one day.
I'ma look deeper than myself.
Search of brighter days, I write through the maze of the madness. Struggle is my address with pain and crack lips. Gunshots coming from sounds of blackness. Given this game with no time to practice. Born on a blacklist, told I'm below average. A life with no cabbage, that's no money if you from where I'm from. Funny, I just want some of your son. Dark clouds seem to follow me. Alcohol that my pop swallowed bottle me. No apology, I walk with a bold on my shoulder. It's a cold war, I'm a colder soldier. Hold the same fight that made Martin Luther the king. I ain't using it for the right thing. In between lean and the fiends, hustle and the schemes, I put together pieces of a dream. I still have one.
I got a dream.
One day
we gonna work it out.
One day
we gonna work it out.
One day
we gonna work it out.
I have a dream.
I got a dream.
One day
we gonna work it out.
One day
we gonna work it out.
One day
we gonna work it out.
I have a dream.
I got a dream.
That one day.
That one day.
That one day.
I'ma look deeper than myself. I gotta find the way.
I have a dream.
My dream is to be free. My dream is to be. My dream is to be. My dream is to be free.
The world see me looking in the mirror. Images of me getting much clearer.
I love this song.
Now, that was part of the soundtrack for Freedom Riders?
Yes.
Now, what was that?
Well, that's the intro song that captures the effort of people to tell the story of the civil rights movement. But it's done to hip-hop because hip-hop is the only language a certain generation can really, a black, can really relate to. And so they attempted to translate that dream into
right.
hip-hop.
We're speaking with Professor Marvin Jones, D. Marvin Jones, and author, and his latest book is Fear of a Hip-Hop Planet, America's New Dilemma. Let's take our last break, and we'll be back with more.
Hey, And we return. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and Dr. Donald Jones of the University of Miami. His book is Fear of a Hip-Hop Planet.
Before you take your first call, could you just back announce that song we just listened to?
Oh, one of the great songs that Common produced is a song called A Dream, and it's the lead-in to the movie Freedom Riders. And it's an effort by a hip-hop artist to translate the message of Dr. King into hip-hop. One of those beautiful songs, beautiful hip-hop pieces I've ever heard.
Okay.
And let's take a call. This is Don. He's in Miami. Hi.
Hi, Mr. Cooper.
Hi.
How you doing? Nice show today. Just interesting, very, very interesting. And I think you can go back into the 50s and the 60s and see some parallels between the black culture today as opposed to when I grew up. Mm-hmm. Like your age, Mr. Cooper. There was the hoodlums and the mm-hmm. bad guys, or whatever. And I grew up in extreme poverty, and in Central Florida, worse than anything I've seen people living in Liberty City or any poor area in Dade or Broward County. And I noticed one commonality when I was a child growing up, and was that there was no fathers in the poor household. As the same in my household, my mom and dad divorced when I was a young kid, and I was thrown into poverty. And it's no different today, and I think the government exacerbates the problem by not educating or teaching girls, young girls, babies, not to have babies. Because once you stop that cycle, you'll stop the poverty.
Do you have a comment, Professor?
Well, I think that one of the tragic problems of poverty is that as it takes place in a city, it has to do with the problem, what we call social disorganization. So it's not merely that the poor don't have enough money, it's that the neighbors they live in, often neighbors where the role models aren't there, the support systems aren't there, and so many problems feed off the other. And teenage pregnancy is part of a chain, dysfunctional family, poverty, fatherlessness. Much of poverty in the United States is households headed by women who, because of discrimination, can't get the same money as other people. So everything you're saying certainly resonates. So that is a powerful aspect, that we have to figure out how we can change cycles in terms of behavior and culture. So that is a piece of it, that call it pathology. But you see, another piece of it, though, is that the opportunities that should be there are not there. I still remember years ago, I was talking to a member of the school board, and he was saying how he thought there should be 24-hour daycare. He was talking about how there should be more training programs for adults, especially mothers with children and so forth. And so the answer to this kind of poverty is not welfare. It is training. It is 24-hour daycare. So everything you're saying is true, but I think that the government could do more. What the government typically does is says, well, if you're poor, it is your fault. And I think there's a truth to that, but it's also true that it has to do with policies which seem to not realize that that people need opportunities. And we seem to, in my opinion, have written off the inner city as if it's another country, if it's South Africa or someplace else. And we need to think of the people who live in that as citizens, not just people living together. They're citizens, they're people who need help and intervention. And you can spend more money on the schools and less money in a drug war. Wow.
Let's move along to another caller. This is Nicole. She's in Miami Beach. Hi there.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call, and thank you so much for this program. It's just wonderful. I appreciate the approach to starting with the music and the culture. It is something that so many of us have a resistance to, and it's true. It's such a multifaceted socioeconomic issue that's so broad. Starting with Tupac, and I'm sure there are many other hip-hop and rapping artists that we
can. Nicole, are you on a cell phone or on a speakerphone?
You know what? I probably am, so let me try to fix that. So that
okay, because it's a little difficult to hear you.
Directly. Okay, thank you. Sorry about that. I'm pulled over in a parking space, too, but I appreciate all the other calls, you and the show. You know, from Tupac, even in Common, who you mentioned, and Will.i.am, who I would almost say is more of a pop-hop, you know, mm-hmm. between pop and hip-hop. The new Kendrick Lamar is an amazing, mm-hmm. has a lot to say in his lyrics. So I do think compassion and understanding is mm-hmm. the beginning to solve these problems. But yes, education, training, everything that I've been on hold to say certain things, and then they've come up in the calls. But I'm just so thrilled with this, and thank you, WLRN. Love your station always.
Oh, thanks so much for calling. Professor, if this isn't too personal, and yes. it may be, have you experienced, when you were young, did you yes. experience segregation? Did you experience
yes.
racism in your life? And how has it affected you?
Well, it inspired me to become a civil rights lawyer. See, I remember listening to Malcolm X. I remember listening to Dr. King. I grew up in an era in which there was just an incredible amount of hope. There was pain. I still remember when we went to the beach, we had to go to a different beach from whites. When I wanted to go to the movie, I had the certain movies I couldn't go to. When I got my first job working at a restaurant, I still remember a woman coming in who was black, and she couldn't sit down and eat in the restaurant. This is the 1960s. Mm. And so I've experienced that. I remember sitting in the back of the bus.
And this was in Baltimore?
In Baltimore. I remember sitting in the back of the bus. And up until I went to college, I never went to an integrated school. All the schools I went to were overwhelmingly black. They were one-race schools. So segregation is something I sat next to. It's something that I experienced firsthand. I didn't just read about it in books.
And we'll move along to another caller. This is Amy. She's in Boca Raton. Hello, Amy.
Hello. Thank you. I've enjoyed so much everything I've heard on NPR today about Martin Luther King Day. It's a much more deep and real take on what sometimes is like a superficial happy holiday, and I'm mm-hmm. really appreciating it. And I'm wondering if the professor is familiar with two things. One is more serious, Thomas Tagore's book on the origins of urban inequality, and I think it ties to what he just said about yes. his own experience. I don't think people really understand that if you, in your lifetime, remember segregation, mm-hmm. we're not very far from it.
Right.
And so how can we expect anything to have changed? And then when you look at Tagore's book and it's the story of Detroit and all the way back, really, in what we think were boom years, mm-hmm. and all of the structural impediments put in place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just don't think, when I'm a history teacher, and when I say to people, think about it, that means grandma mm-hmm. or mom,
mm-hmm.
you know, learned this.
Mm-hmm.
So how can it be different? And, you know, I just think that I want to hear people connect that more, because I think it helps make the, you know, why is this music where you're saying, give me my due?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what do I owe you? Well, I do owe you. I happen mm-hmm. to be white, you know?
Wow.
And
what a beautiful statement.
Yeah, I think that's one thing. And then the other thing is a little bit lighter. I wonder if you remember the Eddie Murphy Saturday Night Live skit where he puts on blackface, but in this case, whiteface. Do you notice when he gets on the bus, and there's some black people on the bus, and they're not in the back or anything, and they get off the bus, and then they're like, this party breaks out, and there's all this free stuff, and the bus ride is free. And he's like, damn, I knew white people did this, you know? And then he goes in the like the convenience store or something, and he's trying to be like all white, like really serious and like businessman-y, and not speaking any sort of urban slang. And then as soon as the less black guy leaves, they're like, yeah, have some food, eat, you know, and like all the white people are partying all the time as soon as the black people leave the room. And have you seen it? It's really funny.
I'm sorry I missed that one. But it's
it's as though we saw it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, you've got to look it up. And to me, you know, it's funny, but really sad, but it's real.
Yes.
That's exactly... You know, we're not having a party and getting free food, but pretty much. That's
no,
pretty much the way our system is structured.
Okay, Amy, we've got to run.
Well, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling.
It's a great statement.
What about the longevity of hip-hop, rap? Well, forget hip-hop, of rap, which
yes.
you say is the music of the hip-hop culture.
Yes.
How do you think it'll evolve in the future? We just have a few seconds.
I think what we're going to see is more of hip-hop speaking to human issues instead of the gritty issues of the urban scene. But I think it's like I'm going to miss an old friend because I like the music of Social Conditions.
Well, we want to thank you so much for being with us today. Dr. D. Marvin Jones is a professor at the University of Miami School of Law. He teaches constitutional law, criminal procedure, and employment discrimination. He's also a columnist, a commentator, and his latest book is Fear of a Hip-Hop Planet, America's New Dilemma. We really enjoyed having you today.
I enjoyed being here.
Thank you.
And thanks for being with us. Apologies to those callers that we couldn't get on the air, including Jason, Robert, and Justin. Our producer is Richard Ives, technical direction by online producer Paul Leary. We have free audio archives and downloads of this and previous programs at our website, WLRN.org. More information at the Topical Currents Facebook page. Drop us a like if you will. Tomorrow's program is with former Miami-Dade High School English teacher David Menashe. After a brain tumor diagnosis and treatment, he's been on a quest to reconnect with former students and explore life's greatest questions. We'll have links to Dr. Jones's book at the Topical Currents Facebook page as well as WLRN.org. And so the calendar. On this day in 1937, 77 years ago, Franklin Roosevelt is the first president to be sworn in on January 20th. It was his second term. And on this day in 1949, 65 years ago, Harry S. Truman is inaugurated as 33rd president. It was the first televised ceremony. And one more. On this day in 1981, 33 years ago, within minutes after Ronald Reagan's inaugural, 52 remaining American hostages are released after 444 days of a captivity in Iran. Former President Carter greets their flight in Germany. Our theme music, created by Michael Levine. We leave with a thought from FDR, who was first elected a New York State Senator in 1910. Quote, "Human kindness has never weakened the stamina or softened the fiber of a free people. A nation does not have to be cruel to be tough." Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. Stay tuned for Here and Now from where else but NPR News.